Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rolling Into the DMs, a D&D podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony, and joining me are two wonderful people.
I am Ethan.
Well, I'm Connor.
Fantastic. We got a great show for you today. You know, I noticed that, like, I was, like, listening to other podcasts, and I heard them be like, yeah, it's a great show for you today. And I'm like, I wonder if anyone has ever made a podcast where they're like, a mediocre at best show for you today. 6 out of 10.
Well, there's a first for everything now, isn't there?
I mean, well, obviously, that would be a more honest way to introduce this podcast.
Guys, this show, I'm not gonna lie to you, though, this show is at least a 3 out of 10.
Oof. Really, though, today we're going to talk a little bit about your NPCs. No, they don't only exist to get murdered. They're an important part of your campaign.
Yeah, wow. They're playing a very important part of getting murdered.
Exactly. Anyway, so creating good NPCs is one of the harder things in D&D, honestly, because if it's not just like he has these stats so he can get killed, you need to make sure that they're unique, they have a good personality, but they are not annoying, they don't overshadow player characters or whatever. So we thought that we would probably talk a little bit about that, some of our strategies for making good characters, some advice on, how you can make good characters. Yeah.
And we're receiving input on those things. Thank you for, all your comments on how we should make our NPCs, because we certainly don't know yet.
We actually don't have a comment system set up. Maybe I'll start uploading these to YouTube so we can have people comment too. Maybe I'll do that. But, yeah, it'd be great, because then they could flame us for being like, what advice is this? This is terrible.
All right, so what we're going to start on is how to make a good passive NPC, one that you don't fight, one that you don't interact with much, one that's just sort of there to fill the space of and ensure that you're like living in a real world. Someone, a character might like ask directions from, like, how do you do that?
Well, to some extent, I think that, like, don't even plan those people, because if they only exist to get directions, then they should give directions. Like, flavor can be good, but you don't want to spend too much time on, like, NPCs that don't have any kind of, like, character at all, I guess. I think that the reason why I would argue that, is because, like, you want it to seem like you live in a real world or whatever. But trying to come up with, like, a backstory for the guy at the bar who will tell them, you know, that's who that person is. That's the famous gangster, you know, Tony Giamatti. And he goes to this bar every day to talk with his boys. You can maybe give that guy, like, a little character, but I feel like if they're literally just an exposition robot, you're not really going to elevate them much by giving them a personality if their only real purpose in your game is to be an exposition robot.
I mean, sure.
Does that make sense?
But I mean, a lot of people aren't very good at improvising. Maybe they want to, like, establish, hey, this person is here who can serve the purpose of such. He's going to talk with this accent, and he knows this much. Like, something like that. You don't have to do much planning. It's probably, like, 30 seconds of anything, and you don't even have to write it down half the time. But, you know, why not?
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's definitely fair.
You don't want, like, the guards in front of a castle to be empty suits of armor. Like, have you ever... Okay, you haven't played Twilight Princess, but there's this pair of guards that guards the castle after this giant, like, force field around it. And you can listen in on...
Wait. Why are they guarding the castle? Because there's a force field around it, so, like, what's the point?
Because it was their job before the force field got put around it, which, after it's there, they're like, what are we still doing here? And it's just sort of, you know, a thing. It adds a little bit of interest to the world.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that's I would consider that like a different, like an explicit flavor character and not just like a super passive, like boring direction-giving man.
But the passive characters are what give it flavor. Like,
well, but it's not, I wouldn't consider that a passive character, though, because it's a character that's, like, an important part of the story, because it's like, yeah, people are confused. Not, like, a semi-important, because it's like, people are confused. You know, like, there's a force field around the castle.
Not at all.
Automation
confused.
Is putting people out of work.
Everyone knows there's a force field around the castle, and no one cares there's a force field around the castle, and these two guards are just standing there. You don't have to talk to them. They're just there.
Wait, why does no one care?
Because it's Hyrule and people are just going on about their lives, playing, like, planning mini games for you and whatnot.
I feel like if there was a force field around the White House, like, we would probably, like, people would probably at least, like, notice it, and they'd be like, oh, that's neat. Maybe he'll stay inside.
I mean, people notice it, but it's not like they care all that much. Life goes on.
That's fair. I guess, I mean, does the people, is the castle, like, important to the Hyrulean economy? Or, like, political governing?
Dude, it's a Nintendo game. Who cares about that?
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Okay, let's get back on topic for a minute. This is now a Zelda podcast. Honestly, I could probably talk about how great Breath of the Wild is for several hours. Hey, Connor!
What?
Remember how you mostly play? What do you think about the NPCs that you see for less than two sentences?
I think
how much effort?
Unfortunately, they don't get a ton of effort.
And would you like them to have more?
Yes.
Listen, I mean, they don't need a ton of effort. They just need to like have a little bit of personality, even if it's only
my issue with kind of like really minor roles like that, you know, if you're just asking someone for directions or whatever, is so often it seems like people just aren't expecting the players to do that, and I think that's one of the worst things you can realistically do, is not expect your players to ask questions of random people. Because at that point you're scrambling and trying to put together an NPC personality very quickly, and in some cases, you then proceed to end the conversation and just say, like, I have no idea what the character was really talking about. I didn't plan for that.
I guess it can sometimes be helpful to have, like, a go-to playbook of, like, here's a couple different, like, in case of emergency, break glass characters. So you can have, like, the town drunk, you can have the overly, like, fussy woman, you know, you can have, like, just base them off, like, sitcom characters or something.
No, no, no.
Every time you ask for directions, you're either talking to George, Jerry, Elaine, or Kramer.
No, okay, so, like, you're gonna build an
you don't
NPC.
Want to ask Kramer for directions,
no,
Ethan?
No, I don't. You're gonna build an NPC. You want it to be, like, okay, so you walk into this town. You ask the first random person for directions. What kind of city is it? Is it a mean city? Is it a nice city? What part of town are they in? Do, like...
Well, they're in New York.
Do they speak common?
And they're in New York.
Do they...
And yeah, well, I mean, with an accent, yeah. And, you know...
You need to plan just sort of a generic... No background, no, like, anything. Just sort of someone has to respond, and how they respond determines how, like, immersed the player could be. So it could just be someone who's just like, yeah, that way. Or you could say... The person tells you to go that way. There's, like, no immersion there. No role-playing.
But to some extent, that can be fine. Don't like...
It can be fine.
If your player is, like, itching to get to a dungeon, don't, like, have, like, a, you know, and he's like, what, which way to the dungeon? He's, like, holding his axe, and, like, the wizard has already prepared fireball and stuff. Don't be like, the man raises his eyeglass, you know, like, the man raises his spectacles and looks at you with a haughty dignity, most often reserved for nobility, but this man is obviously poor. It's a contradiction in terms. Like, don't, like, you know, go on, like, a monologue.
If you've raised your axe and prepared fireball, why the hell are you talking to a random person?
Because you don't know where the dungeon is. You jump the gun.
You don't prepare fireball,
Ethan,
when you don't know where the dungeon
Ethan,
is.
Ethan, premature spell preparing is a real thing, and it affects a lot of wizards. Sometimes you don't even know the way to the dungeon, and you already have fireball prepared.
Okay, I'm sad that that's going to be the best joke of the podcast.
I really hope it isn't. I'm sad, too. I'm the one chilling out hosting money, like...
Okay. Anyway, I have a point there. You have to admit. Okay. Like, if you're roaring to go, then that's totally fine. But also, like, read your players in, like, the situation. You still, like, eh. Yeah, you get what I mean. If the situation is a world-building moment, you need to have that kind of thing ready. And you may not have planned for it to be a world-building moment, but, you know, you gotta have, like, characters ready. They don't even need a name to establish what the world is like at that moment and where they are.
Or if you're really good at improv, just understand where they are and what the world's like at that moment, and you could probably come up with the rest pretty quick.
But, I mean, we can't assume everyone's good at improv.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just saying, like, that is one other option. You don't necessarily need to make NPCs ahead of time. You can just know going into it, like, okay, everyone in this town is in a hurry, and they're really annoyed and irritated, but they're not, like, overly mean. They just have, like, stuff they really want to do, and you're kind of the one intruding in on their day, like, walking up to them with Fireball prepared, and you don't even know where the dungeon is. So, you know, yeah, but I think that that's...
There you go. That's, NPC building, right there.
It's a good rule of thumb. Yeah, that's for super passive, though. Connor, you got any other comments on that subject?
I mean, I think that we've already said it plenty, but I think just the overall point is to be prepared. You know, just have something in mind.
Yeah, Scout's motto, be prepared.
Okay, so... Next, let's focus on someone you may interact a little bit more with. There's someone who could be...
Well...
Okay.
I think that... I wanted to focus... This does fit in that, but I thought that a natural transition was person you barely talk to someone who you talk to for a little amount of time. Yeah. Maybe not as much as a quest giver, which would be the dude behind the counter at the shop.
Was going the same direction there, but I was also thinking we lump in guards, since, hey, you don't necessarily interact with them all that much, but they're statted out. Like, you may be fighting them or fighting with them. You might be fighting all of them at once.
That's happened several times.
Thrice. So, shopkeepers and guards. What do you think, Stotter?
/ Connor.
I think that with shopkeepers and guards especially... And this is one of those things that a lot of people can have different opinions on, and it just kind of depends on what sort of DM you are. But I think that's one of the good places to not necessarily drop, like, exposition, but kind of establish some of the other areas of your world, I guess. Like, guards and shop owners would be more ideal for just kind of giving features of a town or something, just in conversation, like, you know, oh, well, if you're wanting that, you could go over to, like, so-and-so district, and, you know, it's...
Go to the founders district.
It's kind of through, like, a bit of a shadier part of town, but, you know, you should be fine.
You might have to fight some bandits. You might have to fight a CR2 bandit clan. Which is, like, 8 bandits.
I just think that it's a good place to kind of get the lighter stuff of your game world out of the way.
Okay, that's fair.
What about you, Ethan?
I think both... I think, so guards and shopkeeps, I think you should stat out shopkeeps with the mental stats, at least if you think you're... If you have a reason to believe your party won't be attacking them or they won't get involved in combat or anything, like, have their charisma, wisdom, and int ready just because they could be, like, get involved with something like that. They could have to appraise or try to, you know, may have to make some saving throws or something. But other than that, I mean, you can make a general template for every shopkeep in that sense. Guards, you need to have statted out, but don't need individual personalities, per se. Because you may only want to be talking to one guard. And guards...
Sorry. I thought that coughing was the end of the sentence, and not just you dying mid-sentence. So finish the sentence and then perish.
Well, as we've all seen in MMOs, guards are pretty cookie-cutter. Like, the whole someone steal your sweet roll type thing.
What?
The Skyrim joke.
Oh. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on stat out the shopkeepers. I think that really depends on your party. Like, in college, I had, like, a bunch of trickster people, and they would always cast, like, spells on shopkeeps, and that kind of stuff. But, like, you guys never really do so, because most of your characters are good aligned, a lot of them are lawful. At least one of them's lawful, I think. So, you know, you're not going to... The alignment system sucks anyway. Let me just... I accidentally said something with the alignment system without saying that it sucks. It sucks. But you're the kind of people who don't necessarily cast spells on shopkeeps, like, ever. So I don't really stat that out that much. And I also do kind of assume if you ever did, like, you're fairly high level in your current campaign. They're all level 12. So the kind of people they're interacting with, they're just like a potion seller, who cares? But if you're, like, buying, like, high-ticket items, I just kind of assume that they're probably also fairly dangerous, and if, you know, worst comes to worst, I could just pull out the Archmage template or something, you know? Because I feel like anyone who has a shop where they sell, like, multi-thousand platinum magic items is probably going to have a couple class levels. So, you know, Archmage or Assassin or something like that. But I don't think it's really necessary 100% of the time to stat them out ahead of time. Because, like, when have you ever, like, I don't know if you personally have ever needed those stats, but I have never been in a situation, except in my one campaign I played with some buddies in college, where that was, like, required.
You know, the reason I haven't needed those stats is because the only campaign I run is with you guys, which is pretty much just a murder hobo campaign, and you don't...
It's really, we're not murder hobos, we're just, people try to kill us, and we're very good at killing them back.
Okay, fine. But
I do kind of want to address something about that. You mentioned that we don't really do any of that sort of stuff with shopkeepers in your campaign, and, like, I'm going to try to keep this short, but part of it just has to do with positioning of NPCs, which I think goes along with this very well. If you are basically just told that a shopkeeper falls out of the sky, essentially, like he, for some reason, does so often in ours, it's hard to really say, like, oh, we should do something to this guy, because it's kind of clear that this is meant to just be the one-stop shop for the next couple of sessions.
I do admit to doing that. The times when I give shopkeepers flavor are where they're, like, story-based. But I do think that there's a lot of times where people will be like, oh, can we buy some stuff? We have a couple players who really just enjoy buying things, I guess. Like, they really, they say it's like some of the, you know, like, oh yeah, we got to get some cool gear. So, you know, if they're in, like, town and they're like, oh, can we, you know, purchase some things? You know, I'm kind of like, eh, if we have time for it in the session, and sometimes I'm bad about this, and sometimes I'm like, yeah, sure. And we just go on a shopping spree when, like, the world's about to end. But, you know, I'll kind of, like, throw out, like, yeah, okay, you know, there's a shopkeeper or whatever, and then it's really more like an MMO type thing, which I don't, maybe that's, like, me being a bad DM, but I think that at a certain point, if your players just want to spend some gold, and you, like, they're in a city that's story not important, or whatever, they're just, like, stopping there because it's, like, there's, like, an inn there, or it was near the latest actual thing they did, and you just fully expected them to leave, and instead they shop. I don't really flesh them out that much, because, you know, sometimes it's also unexpected. I think that a shopkeeper is probably the NPC that's most likely to you to be unexpected if your campaign travels around a lot. If you're in, like, the same city, then yeah, you have the same guy who runs the magic shop, or the armor, those type of things. But if your campaign is, like, say, set in a terrible setting where everyone has a magic motorcycle and your players regularly make 1,000-mile-plus road trips... you know, you can kind of get into the scenario where, you think that they're gonna go do something, because there's, like, some kind of time clock, and instead they're like, hey, can we go shopping? And you have to be like, yeah, you know, which is non-ideal, but it sometimes happens.
I can see your point on that, but at the same time, again, I suppose this all just kind of comes back to preferences of DM, but I feel like there are certain situations where you need to tell the players that, you know, if there is a shop in this small town that's kind of far away, it might not have much. It might not have everything that they're looking for, and that's just kind of something they'll have to accept until they're able to get back to, like, a bigger city or someplace they know to have that sort of thing. Because should be, to a degree, factored into the campaign, you know, the fact that the player characters will have to occasionally go and try to find places to spend money and buy things that they want, and that's not always going to be an option when they're off saving the world.
I'd like to do that, but I feel like some of our current players in our group find that annoying. They get, like, annoyed when they can't just buy stuff, and I, as a DM, try to accommodate players in that respect, at least. So I'm a little more okay with it, but I think that you are, like, personally, as a player like myself, whenever I play, if I get a bunch of money, I will typically, like, save it until there's some kind of cool story event where I can use it. And if I'm going to get magic items or whatever, I would prefer to, like, find an ancient sword or something. That's way cooler to me than going to a shop and buying a plus one ancient sword, you know? So I think that that's, it really does depend on your players to some degree.
Okay, here's the thing. You, like, let's say you just sort of drop it, a shopkeeper out of the sky. It's like, great, now shopping spree time. It's like, okay, shopping spree, whatever. Yeah, that's cool, but it's much more satisfying. Even the shopping spree stuff, which everyone in our group seems to like. I won't say everyone. Even that's much more satisfying if you actually go out and find it. If you're not like, tick-tock, ooh, shopping spree, and you're on the clock. It's just...
Okay.
Like... Yeah. You need to be maneuvered. If you need to be maneuvered into those situations, it's way less satisfying.
I feel like you guys feel like that, and I feel like, first of all, this is most definitely about in the last session. Okay, they stopped by like a military camp. So this wasn't a shopkeeper falls out of the sky. It was explicitly like a private army that sells this kind of stuff. So it wasn't too bad.
That sells everything.
But they stopped by that on the way to do something, and two of my players are like, hey, can we spend some gold? And I'm like, I guess, sure. And this entire time, there's literally a bomb about to go literally off. And they're like, well, we'll just pick up on some supplies. And, like, for me, I know that those players would have been very annoyed if I said, no, they're not going to sell, you know, whatever. Those players really like to just do it. So I feel like this is partially, like, you guys say it's satisfying, and I would agree. I always check out on the shopping, like, parts, you know. Like, when I was in another campaign where I was just a player in college, when people would shop, I would literally just pull out my phone and wait until it was done. Which, again, that's like, okay, I'm being a bad player character, whatever, but it's literally 10 minutes of players asking the GM, well, how much would, like, this cost? And I'm like, ugh, I don't care. You know, but to those people, it's a lot of fun. And to the people who went shopping in our last session, it was a lot of fun. Like, one guy even said, I do it at the end of all my sessions, I recommend you do this too. I say, what's one thing you liked and one thing you disliked? He said that one of the things he liked the most was getting to go and get some really cool, neat, Dragonborn-based military gear. You know, whereas I'm kind of like, eh, I wasn't enjoying it as much, but I try to accommodate whatever my players like, and they like to do that kind of stuff. So I don't know if it's really fair to say that it's less satisfying in general. I think it's less satisfying for you two specifically. And me as well, honestly.
Well, it would probably be equally satisfying for those players that did enjoy it. Don't you think? I mean, they're clearly not there for, like, the world. Like, they're not there for, like, hey, let's go find a shop that sells this. Therefore, just for the shopping. I mean, you could accommodate both.
Yeah, you could, but the problem is they're also the kind of, I don't know, it seems like they get a little annoyed when they can't buy stuff. Like, they're like, I don't know. Maybe that's me being too paranoid. And I think that you are right. And actually, this does bring me something I want to talk about, which is that when I do ever plan out a shopkeeper, and like, because most of the time I try, at least, I don't know if I really succeed, and having there be like designated buy zones, like in CSGO or whatever. But whenever I do plan out like a shopkeeper, I always try to make them a bit wacky or over the top in some way, because I know that like you two, you're not really a huge fan of like sitting there and watching other people spend gold. So I think that if you do have a mixed group where some people really like shopping and some people don't, having a shopkeeper who is in some way amusing can at least provide some entertainment for the people who would otherwise be very bored.
Yeah. That's a very good thing. So yeah, that's a very good point to make, bringing us back to the topic at hand. Planning out your shopkeeper's personalities is always a good idea, because while your characters are going to be interacting with them, it's more fun if they're interesting.
Yeah,
I've got a story if you guys are interested in hearing it, once we're done with this bit.
Story time. I'll add a sound effect.
Okay.
Probably.
So, college campaign, I'm playing a half-elf oracle. There is one blacksmith in this town of primarily lumberjacks and mercenaries that are coming through all the time. So he gets paid well. His problem, he hates half-elves. But the deal is, I have the highest charisma in the party. So I'm always the one going in there and bartering. And sort of character mode, I'm like, hey, I'm going to become friends with this guy because he hates me. And slowly that progressed to him hating me more and me being permanently banned from his shop. And
that sounds like you in real life a little bit.
Okay, yeah, to be fair, that's a little bit me. hey, at least in this...
I'm going to make friends with this guy. And then just like slam cut to you being like thrown out. No soup for you.
Yeah, anyway... So that was a lot of it. There was a lot of interesting character involvement there. Like, even the rest of the party got involved. Like, okay, you're going to walk in there, you're going to barter, and you're going to leave. And then I asked him to go ask if he wants to go get drinks later, and he's like, leave.
Wait, were you, like, hitting
him? No, I just, like, want to be friends with him. He said leave because apparently he's a dwarf that doesn't drink and said I was being racist. The whole deal is he hates half-elves. He's literally racist. And that was my argument, so I'm never going back in there again. But not because he banned me.
But not... I choose! You're not breaking up with me!
Anyway, so there was a lot of fun there, because this shopkeep, not only, like, did he hate half-elves, but he also had a ton of personality built in as well, being the cocky, only blacksmith in a town that needed a blacksmith desperately.
You should set up another... You should, like, find a blacksmith to move to that town and, like, ruin his business.
Well, that was the thing. I was going to start going into blacksmithing to piss him off.
Nice. This is a Pathfinder campaign, by the way.
Yeah.
I might insert a boo sound effect there. I'm not sure. But how much con does he have again?
I don't know.
I thought you said that he was... I know one of his stats is, like, freakishly low,
isn't it? It's his strength that's low. His con is an 11.
What's his strength?
His strength is an 8, I believe.
I don't know if you can really... I guess blacksmithing... You could... It'd be pretty hard to do it at 8 strength.
And in Pathfinder, it's really all about the feats.
Yeah, that's...
And I mean...
Pathfinder's dumb. This isn't a Pathfinder podcast. Shun the non-believer. I don't know.
Hey, at least we get to play Oracle in that, which is the coolest class ever.
I don't know. Oracle is honestly a pretty bad hero. Like, his combos are just, like, really hard to hit, and you always random him in a ranked game, and then you just lose.
Okay, if that was a Dota...
That
was a joke
that maybe two people in our audience will get.
Two? I don't get it. I'm going to imagine
Yeah,
zero.
Two over zero. Infinity percent.
Anyway...
No, it's because Connor will listen to the full thing at one point, maybe. And then Andrew, who was not able to make it today, will listen to it, and he'll be like, super! That's hilarious! He doesn't sound anything like that. Do we want to talk for a minute about, like, our, like, just some neat, like, shopkeeper or guard templates that, like, people can use, you know? Like, provide some real practical help, like, if they want to rip off... You know, advice from us. We can give them some fun ideas.
Why would they want bad advice?
Well, no, it'd be great. We have great... Like, here, I'll start. You can have a shopkeeper who's in, like, a really rough part of town or whatever, and normally doesn't get customers who are, like, as wealthy or nice as the, like, player characters who walk in. If your player character is a little higher level, or maybe they're just a little more dignified. But instead of being like, hey, you rich jerks, he's, like, trying to impress them or whatever, so they'll buy stuff. So he's very obviously a rough around the edges, like, chav kind of dude. And he's, like, constantly swearing on accident, like, apologizing profusely, and, you know, accidentally saying, like, yeah, you know, some guy came in after, you know, he did one of his jobs and had to get rid of this merch real fast, because, he was afraid that the price might go down, and he had just done an honest day's labor, and he needed to trade it to me, you know, like, something like that, where it's kind of like, you know, he's trying to be a lot more professional than he actually is.
Or you can be a creative DM and come up with your own. No. Okay, but as far as, like, what do you think about guards? You can be, like, the help guard, the annoying guard. The incompetent guard is always funny. And then there's, like, I'm watching you kind of type.
You can just make Dirty Harry.
That's about it. That's about it.
You can make make the soup Nazi as a shopkeeper too. I forgot. There's always the soup Nazi archetype.
I don't know what the soup Nazi is.
I don't think any of our so for our audience, the less cultured in our audience, like poor Ethan here, the soup Nazi is a character on Seinfeld that runs a soup shop to like the best soup in New York, but you have to do everything very particularly, or he'll throw you out of his shop. This character's really annoying if you like need supplies, so don't do that, please. But if you just, like, you know, you just want to have some downtime or whatever, and it's, like, a fun, flavorful thing, you can have a character where you have to, like, you know, address him as Mr. Whatever, and he, like, progressively throws each party member out of the shop.
Okay, that could be funny.
Connor, do you have any NPC ideas?
Okay.
Ethan, you got any more?
I think the most important thing about creating NPCs is have fun. And make sure your players can have fun, and, like, that's it. If you're having fun with an NPC and your characters are having fun with an NPC, do it. Like, remember, I'm trying to come up with an example. Remember Curdle Mac?
Yeah!
We have fun with Curdle Mac because of his personality. And you have fun with Curdle Mac, it sounds like.
Because I get to do fun accent.
Yeah.
And, he's fun. I like Curdle Mac's fun to play, right? Because he kind of, you know, he's like sort of like depressed. I don't know. He's fun. It's a neat character. In order for me to let me just explain a little bit, this is way too hard to explain. Curdle Mac is the same Curdle Mac that's like the god of kobolds or whatever. But kobolds are really crappy, so he's like a really crappy, low powered god. He owns like a bar, and you know, they met him. They didn't know he was Curdle Mac or whatever. They kind of became friends with him because he had a sort of like, I don't know how you describe his attitude.
You know,
you'd probably describe it, or you guys would be better than
we me. Identified with Curdle Mac because we're like this low level party, and he's this low level god that's like the god of kobolds in one bar. He let us hang out in this bar. He's like, he's been helpful to us, and then we find out he's a god, and it's like, dude, we'll support you. It's great.
It's really nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. Just the synergy there. And a lot of, like, NPC personality. Like, did you have an idea for how things were going to go with Curdle Mac at the time?
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, I'm going to be real. Like, it's fine to modify your NPCs a little bit. Because Curdle Mac was originally going to be, like, a high-level cleric or something. You guys never actually asked his name, ever. Right?
Yeah.
So I was originally going to have him be a high-level cleric. And then I'm like, you know, maybe he just is Curdle Mac. Maybe he just is the actual god. That'd be kind of fun. And it's fine to do stuff like that, I think. And Curdle Mac's personality is kind of like a, tries to be chipper, but like, you know, is sort of down on his luck. That I did plan out ahead of time.
Okay.
I mean, this is kind of moving into like a different area, yeah, which is like long-term plot-relevant NPCs, is I guess what we're talking about.
But for a while, he was just a shop. He was just a bar owner. And he was just, yeah, a guy we met in passing. But, you know, so Curdle Mac, like, that was a very reactive thing. The, dwarven blacksmith, also a very reactive thing, even though he had a little bit of a set personality. It, like, it works like that.
If you have, like, an idea of an NPC's, like, wants and, like, general outlook on the world, you can generally come up with the rest of personality a lot easier than if you have a certain character, like, if you have, like, a, you know, character trait of is defensive about family, that works a lot better than writing down the sheet that, like, when someone insults his mom, he will do this. If someone insinuates that his dad left him, he might do this. You know, if you just generally get, like, prone to violence, really defensive about family, you know, would rather, like, harm than kill.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, like, pretty much that. Just set out the groundwork and then see how your characters react and how you think that character would react in the time. And then, you know, run with it.
Yeah, exactly. So, Connor, you got any advice for us on long-term NPCs?
I mean, I guess I don't really have as much input on this since obviously I don't really create any of this stuff, so I can't really speak on the difficulty of how much time it takes to come up with NPCs versus how effective they could be in a campaign, but a little bit that I've done working on just some of my own content, I will say that I already am trying to come up with NPCs that would ideally be around throughout the course of the campaign. And I know that both of you at various points have mentioned that, you know, you have different opinions on having NPCs that kind of, I don't know how you want to say it, that they have their own story that they're playing out alongside the characters. I think that that can sometimes be interesting. It has to be done well, but I think that that's definitely one cool thing you can do with long-lasting NPCs. Like, come up with a story for them and their own motivations, and don't just have them be your quest givers.
But do you write the story out beforehand, is the question. Do you say that, well, like, to what extent? Do you say that, like, Bob the Wizard is insecure about the fact that he never, like, he had a childhood friend who disappeared and he's never found out why, and then when the players get this orb, he goes on a quest to, because the orb has her voice in it or her soul or something, and then they meet him at this other area? Because to me that feels like it requires a bit of railroading to, like, hit the story beats you've written, you know?
That's not exactly the idea I would come up with. I think it's better to come up with plot elements, but not necessarily a plot line, I guess. It's better to come up with maybe just a handful of different things that the NPC might do over the course of the campaign, and of course this is all stuff that the DM would be able to alter realistically at any point during the campaign. And, you know, if there's ever a point that you think this could be interesting to toss in, you know, it could be kind of cool. I think that you can take certain NPCs and make them much more interesting by showing that they're being active. I mean, I know that obviously the campaigns that we've been playing are all very active on the player parts, and it's all, you know, you have to go and save the world or whatnot, but I think in more relaxed campaigns where it's just kind of the usual go find jobs and go and clear out a dungeon for some hapless father, you can sometimes inject a bit of, I don't know if you would want to call it action or just some interesting things by having an NPC do stuff like that.
Yeah. Ethan, what's your position on this?
So, like, quest givers? Quest giver type thing? So, NPCs. I'll tell you what I do. I always plan way more than we need. And part of that just comes from my inability to actively improvise or to plan on improvising for something. If I do, I just sort of trip over my own tongue for a while. But I'd say that give, like, your quest-relevant NPCs a ton of stuff to work with, because, well, your characters may... probably won't be interested, but they may be interested in, like, some background. They may, like, they may be interacting this, with this character in ways you didn't expect. So establish a personality. If you're giving, like, the character... if you're giving a character levels in something... then they need a personality as well, and they need a, yeah, and they need a background, something.
But like, what kind of planning do you do? Do you write out like, here's all the things that happened to them, or is it just kind of like, here's their general outlook and personality?
For me, it's a lot of thinking about like, okay, so this character's shoes for the last 100 miles been like. This way, and that's why in the moment they would be like this, but I would also give them a little bit of a background and have an overview of the personality. Yeah, so that, but remember, it's also situational.
Yeah,
they won't be.
I don't think you need to do, even for really plot important NPCs, you definitely need to do enough planning. I don't know if you need, like, for me, I don't do a real huge amount. And that can kind of lead to NPCs like there's, so, in Spirals, right, a major plot line. Spirals is the campaign I run, I named it because I'm a hack. There's a major plot line where all the gods are sort of a little depowered because there's like an ancient elder god and he's like, there's too many gods now, I don't like it, we're gonna cut it down, we'll have a nice fun contest to see who gets to stay divine, who gets to die horribly. And, you know, the god that, your character, Ethan, Sildan, his god was Corellon. He really liked Corellon. And I initially was going to have Corellon be sort of like an overworked type of person who has a lot on his plate, and he has a lot he's dealing with, and he's, like, high stress, and he's like, yeah, you know, congratulations, you've done a lot of good stuff, Sildan. I gotta go and deal with this now. And it's sort of like, I didn't really write down, like, here's all this... stuff, and you know, here's all the things that he, you know, did, and here's what he really believes in. I have a little bit of what he really believes in, but it's not like, you know, here's all this backstory, and here's the when he became divine, and here's his greatest failure, whatever. But I just kind of had this idea in my mind of this really overworked person that has a lot of you know, stuff on his plate and is like very hard to approach. And then sort of as the campaign went on, so many more bad things happened to poor Corellon. Maybe not poor Corellon. Poor Sildan. I don't think any of our... to poor Sildan, yes. You know, that he kind of morphed from, like, I'm just stressed to, like, I'm so stressed, I'm a complete jerk. Like, he became a much worse person as a result of all the crap he's dealing with. Not in an excusable way, either. But it wasn't like I planned on having that happen necessarily. I just kind of realized that if I am the person who's already stressed and overworked and kind of easily irritated, like if you add on this like mortal peril and like all these horrible things are happening because everyone's trying to impress the Elder God for their God and he has to deal with a lot of it, that he's gonna not snap necessarily, but just kind of like... almost do like a Foster Kane thing where he starts out as a really idealistic young man and then the world like beats him down into a huge jerk. And that's kind of like he started out as like a, you know, a little bit of a stressed, irritable person. And the events of the couple months after that God came back was beat him down into like a huge jerk. And I didn't necessarily need to plan all that. And I think it worked fairly well. And, like, kind of realistically, to some degree. I hope. I mean, maybe you guys are like, wow, this Corellon, I don't know why he's such a jerk now. But, yeah, you know, no, you guys seem to like that little
it's
thread.
It's clear. And I really like that little thread, because I really like what you did with my character there. But I think, so yeah, that's a perfect example of don't plan where you're going necessarily. Sure, it could be a nice thing, but, like, plan where a character's been before the next time you meet them.
Or no, or what I'm saying, before the next time you meet them, yeah, but I'm saying you don't necessarily need to have their entire backstory all the way lined out before your characters meet them. I think it's, for me at least, when I'm playing a character, it's much more important for me to know that this person is irritable, stressed, and overworked than for me to know the specifics of, like, how that came to be their personality. You know, I think it's just easier if I have this, like, here's how this person acts. That's way more important to me than here's, like, why this person came to act in that way.
Okay. I guess that's fair, too. Like, I overplan because I like overplanning as well.
But your improv sessions are so good. Like, the one where we, like, left guards to die after casting sleep for, like, a horde of, like, 400 zombies. Like, that was hilarious.
That was horrible. You're horrible people.
They were trying to kill us. They totally deserved it.
Yeah, well, they were following orders.
That's literally the excuse the Nazis use.
That's a fair point, yeah. And these guards are nice. Almost literally Nazis.
Which character were you playing at that point? Connor has changed his character. What? Oh, yeah, that was the first time you started playing Catboy.
Yeah. I needed something to get you two together, because there would be no character reasons why not to. So I totally railroaded you into a zombie apocalypse.
But that was great. I was 100% fine with that, like, weird, wacky improv thing. And then, like, you know, someone offers to do astral travel with us, and we're like, sure. And you're like, what? And we're like, yeah. And the way you handled it was amazing. Like, us beating the vampire, and the vampire you thought we were going to have to fight, and then you realized he would just, like, murder us.
So we became a nerd.
Yeah, like a massive nerd that just never saw the sun. Like, that was great. You know, like, improv characters can be a lot of fun. You can improvise even major plot threads, you know? I also have to throw in a little sidebar here. Don't feel like you need to stick to your original vision of a character.
Oh, absolutely not.
Because if you have, like, a kobold and he's supposed to be a really high-level cleric, you know, you can go ahead and make him a god sometimes. Maybe that's sometimes a good thing to do.
Yeah, done that with about a third of the characters you've met. I've just changed them, like, 5 minutes before you meet them, or sometimes on the spot.
Like, we're interacting with them, and you're like, oh.
Like that one wizard you met, he was gonna be competent, then I thought, wouldn't it be funnier if he wasn't? And he locked himself out of his office twice.
Classic. Yeah. So, Connor, what do you think about, all that stuff, because you're oddly silent, and we can't have a two-man podcast. That's, like, that's so 2008.
Yeah, I mean, that would get us, like, never mind.
What?
I don't know about any of that stuff. I, as a player, can never say when you're improvising or not. Actually, that's a lie, well, but...
What do you think is the best character you've had in, Either of our two campaigns. Choose.
Non-player character.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Or in the other campaigns we've been in together.
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of gets. That's one thing that's, like, super irritating, and, like, this is kind of off topic, but not really. When you're playing as many campaigns as we do, I honestly lose track of so many things, like NPCs, and I guess if we're wanting to, like, actually tie that in with all this, it's a very good reason to make your NPCs interesting, because otherwise your players will just completely forget about them.
How could you guys forget? How could you forget Linus?
Linus, the one that we've tried to contact, like, 5 times over the past, like, 8 sessions.
He sends back a message every time!
Yes, and it basically says, I don't know anything. The end.
Yeah.
You can't just phone a friend for every Jeopardy question.
He never even, like, says if he's doing all right. He doesn't care. I don't think he loves us anymore.
You guys never ask! You guys never ask. You guys used to be friends, and now it's just a working relationship. No one's friends anymore. Well, what happened, Connor?
I don't know.
What happened? Linus just wants you to ask how he's doing once in a while.
Maybe he doesn't want to ask how someone might be killing all the tieflings. He wants you to ask, how are you? Or
yeah. How's your day go? How are you recovering from being dead for 2 days? Remember that?
How's that life that we restored you going?
Yeah, remember when you made him like a horrible, like partially kobold thing because you used the shittiest god in the world to help resurrect him? Remember that?
I think he should still be thankful.
He is thankful, but it's hard. You know, maybe you're going to ask him how he's adjusting. Maybe he likes it.
I mean,
maybe it's made him a more humble person.
Maybe he's developed we should, maybe if you're going to have a very, well, that's considered high divinity setting. I don't know. Where the gods are very active, should probably map out more than, like, three.
There's more, it's just that you guys never ask about them.
I have asked about other gods, and you've just been like, they're not in their temple. Okay.
Fine. I don't know how that's relevant to Linus at all.
I'm just saying.
See? This is just like you. This is just like you. We're trying to talk about Linus, you don't even care! You don't even care about the guy anymore.
It's because he's boring.
Linus is breaking up with you, Connor.
Okay, so let's talk about characters based on other characters. Linus is sort of a bad example since you've probably never met Linus Pauling or
Linus Torvalds.
Okay, yeah, Linus Pauling was the chemistry one. Okay, so what about characters based on media? Because, like, let's see, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Like, you talked about Seinfeld characters. I don't want to be talking to Kramer in, like,
okay.
Fantasy City First Anonymous.
If you don't want to talk to Kramer ever, then you're out of my campaign.
I'm not, I mean, sure I'd like to talk to Kramer, but I want to talk to Kramer, like, at an appropriate time.
I think that you can take personalities. For example, Kramer would make a good, like, weird warlock, or like, wizard, maybe, or, like, a halfling, because he's pretty lucky. Like, you can like, maybe alter personalities. When it comes to, like, outright lifting characters, it can create kind of sticky situations, especially if they're characters from, like, a show or a movie or a book that some of your players have seen and some haven't.
So, yeah, we don't want... I mean, it'd be cool if we met the halfling, Barry, who, has a similar personality to Kramer and similar quirks, or I don't know who Kramer is. But...
Quirks is good. Kramer's
yeah,
pretty quirky.
Yeah. But I don't want to be talking to the halfling Kramer who acts exactly like Kramer if I know who Kramer is. Because that's just too predictable.
He's mysteriously really tall, and he's like he like slides in to eat cereal and tells you why you lost a bet about not masturbating once.
Yeah, I don't want to deal with that.
Probably shouldn't bring up that last thing, even outside of it being Kramer. It's not the kind of campaign you really. I mean, if you want, if you guys like that, it's just that it's not my cup of tea.
No,
Connor, what do you think?
I generally don't like characters based on other forms of media, if not just because there's always going to... I guess I shouldn't say always, but with our campaigns, you always end up with, like, the one person who knows what it's a reference to or something, even if the others don't. And you know, you always get, like, one or two people that are just like, oh, let's make jokes about this for, like, half an hour now.
Yeah, and you can even encounter that with just, like, accidentally naming a character after something. Like, I named a paladin Vita because it's, like, similar to, like, a Latin word for, like, life or protector. I don't even remember. And now she's PS Vita, the portable gaming dragon. And it's really, really sad. But it's really kind of out of your control as a DM. Like, you never know how dumb your players are going to be. It's good to assume that they're going to be very dumb, but...
yeah... I mean, I give you guys the benefit of the doubt, but the doubt has, well, you're building some wiggle room. I'll just give you that much.
Nice. But, like, who is, like, I think it can be sometimes fun to have cameos of characters from, like, other campaigns. That can be, like, a fun thing to do.
Okay, yeah, that's a fun thing. But, like, don't make him a major character.
Yeah, probably not.
I wouldn't, like, throw Sildan in there because... Well, first of all, I have someone in that campaign who doesn't know who Sildan is. Well, he does from stories. And second of all, it's like, I don't want to be, like... Sildan's there. He's got his personality from that. And I don't want to throw him into, like, the other one with his personality there for no reason.
Yeah. It can be fun for, like, a one-scene cameo. Like, I play this nice bird lady cleric. She's very nice. She's a character that's not an asshole for once for me. You guys were, like, going to go talk to, like, the bird god, and I was like, it'd be fun if she was, like, a cleric, you know, because she's a cleric in the other campaign, and if I just dragged her token on, had, like, a one-seed cameo, and that can be kind of neat. It can be kind of fun to, like, especially if it's set in the same setting, and you maybe have, like, NPCs from, like, other campaigns you've played in it make, like, little cameos. That can be fun. You don't want to make it, like... you know, use discretion.
Yeah. In fact, another fun thing to do is, hey, have your characters kill one of your... have your players kill one of your characters unknowingly. Like, make him the enemy.
Like, yeah, especially if they don't know the character at all. Because you have the stat sheet and stuff already rolled out, you know?
Yeah, there's the stats. It's really fun to see how your character would do in a fight against your players. Why not? That can be a little bit of fun for the DM that, like, characters don't have to worry about, and they can still have fun murdering someone, if they're into that.
And it's, like, you know, personally easy for you.
Yeah. So, yeah, no problem with having a character cross campaigns.
Guys, I only have disk space for 584 hours and 53 minutes.
We're gonna have to stop sometime in September.
We have one other type of character that we need to talk about. It's the most dreaded kind of character. Oh wait, we might have two. Let's just say one sentence on this type of character. Waifu character. Ethan, what do you think of waifu characters?
No.
Connor, waifus.
I'm glad we agree.
That's good. It's good shit. Okay, no. The other type of character is a character that's going to be following the player characters around for a bit, and that's going to be participating in combat, and is kind of a DMPC, a little bit.
Okay, well, this is a really interesting thing to work with. I think that character can be made just like a player character can be made, but just for the DM. The important thing, though, is that it doesn't overshadow the actual party players.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's pretty common advice. It can really help to have the DM character be, like, shitty in some way. Like, maybe they're low level, or like a kobold, but,
Or a pair of kobolds.
Yeah, a pair of kobolds that are levels... were supposed to die, and then they just didn't, and then they, like, stuck around for, like, a month. And they might be making a comeback, because now three of my players want to go back and get them, because they feel bad for leaving them.
Sucks for them.
That's what you get for making us feel bad for leaving them. Because you didn't kill them.
I was actually
them.
Pretty proud of that. I managed to make a DMPC sort of, like, on accident, that not only was not annoying, but that you guys liked so much, you wanted more of. That's how you. That's generally a good way to know if your character's good, by the way. If your players ask questions about them, or, like, say they want to see them again, that means that you've made a good character. If multiple people groan when the character shows up, stop using the character.
I think that's some pretty good advice right there, yeah. Pretty much that, yeah. Make sure your character isn't someone that they entirely rely on if something happens. Make the DMPC the, like, penultimate healer in the party that overshadows everyone else. Like, hey, you don't need to worry about everyone, anything, because I'm here.
Yeah, I think that, one thing that's really important with that sort of NPC is that you need to be sure that you have a point in them showing up. It's not just like, here's my NPC tagging along. It needs to, at least in my opinion, have plot relevance. You know, it doesn't have to be like some huge plot revolving around this character or anything, but they need to have some sort of interest in the situation and actually have reason for why they in particular are going with you instead of anybody else. Because you can't really just say, like, oh, this person wants to go with you because these orcs killed their family and they need to go and fight them. Because if it's like some crappy little farmer or something, you know, you don't want to make an NPC that runs along with player characters that just sucks, but I agree that you need to make one that isn't, like, completely over the top either. I think that's one of the best things you can do with that type of NPC in particular is don't make them, like, a main character and be willing to accept if they do die.
Which they should absolutely be, like, make sure they're not immune to dying. They should absolutely be as in danger of dying as the player characters, if not more, because, well, don't want to be necessarily killing
which, you know,
unless it's that kind of campaign.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes that danger of dying can be zero. Like, if your players are just, like, ridiculously lucky and everything always misses its freaking saving throw to not get stunned, and then your cool boss fight is suddenly sitting on the ground begging for mercy while everyone sits around kicking it, like the, like, wimp in school who came without lunch money and he has several different bullies and he has to, like, manage your financial network to pay all his protection money, and finally he runs out! And that's how the story of how all my bosses fight.
And all the bullies have stunning strength.
All the bullies have stunning strike. Yeah, just, you know, characters can die. I think, like, it's okay to slightly nerf a character if your players attack it occasionally. If it's supposed to be like, I'm an all-powerful wizard, you know, and your player characters just, like, are like, nah, screw this guy. You don't necessarily have to power word kill one of your players, but at the same time, it's like, that's kind of like nerfing a boss fight that's too hard, and a lot of DMs don't like that because it's, like, cheating. And I haven't really done that. The one time I really thought I was gonna have to, they wound up just poisoning the guy with a poison I completely forgot that I had, and he just died horribly. So, it didn't really matter that he was an all-powerful wizard.
Yeah, that was great.
He rolled a 2 on his insight check, and he's like, yeah, sure, I'll drink your tea.
It kind of makes me think, though, with NPCs, I understand that not every group is going to be, you know, the heroes who run around just doing nothing but good all the time. But it doesn't change the fact that not really, just kind of regardless of what setting you're in, chances are the NPCs of that world are going to prefer people who are nicer. And if the players do something like attack an NPC for no reason, like, I've kind of joked once or twice in spirals about, like, oh, we should just kill this NPC and take all this nice stuff he has, but I would never do that because I guess in my mind it would make sense that there would be consequences for doing that sort of thing. Like, yes, in theory you could probably take on just about everybody in an entire city, but should you?
The answer is sometimes yes, but
maybe. But I'm just saying, with NPCs in particular, there sometimes should be consequences, in my opinion. You know, if your players are acting completely out of line and, you know, they're doing something just stupid, well, why would the people in that town tolerate that?
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think that, don't overreact, though, and if your players are mean to your favorite NPC, have your favorite NPC, like, hate them, or whatever. But it's also good to, like, have NPCs that are kind of, like, maybe, like, sympathetic sometimes, you know? If your players have been through something, like, real rough, and are, like, not, you know, they just come in or whatever, and the guy's, like, all friendly, and he's like, hey, hello, want a drink? And your player's like, ah. Sometimes, maybe, they'd, like, realize, like, you know, you don't have to react in the extremes to people all the time, and it doesn't have to go from, I really like you guys, you're a really fun party to hang out with, to, like, wow, you guys are jerks, I hate you forever, I'm gonna summon an army of orcs to destroy your family. You know, you can sometimes have, like, NPCs that are, like, This is a really shitty way of basically just saying, consider context. Always.
Make your
if your players are good friends with somebody, they can maybe be not as nice to them for a little bit and get away with it. But if your players have never met somebody, they're going to be a lot less sympathetic.
Yep. So the moral of the story is, make your NPCs like real people, but not that much like real people, because those things suck.
I think you were kind of touching on this a bit, Anthony, already, but I think that it needs to be considered that, you know, if they are being played like real people, like Ethan says, they should not immediately jump from one view of the players to another, but, you know, there's going to be a gradient, obviously. There's going to be NPCs that if the player characters just come up and start acting like a bunch of jerks, they'll, you know, they won't necessarily try to do anything to them, you know, they won't call the guards on them or something, but they're certainly not going to recommend the party to other people who have needs or something.
Yeah. So consequences like that aren't necessarily life-threatening, but also just a tiny bit inconvenient. So, any last notes before we log off?
You remember, in real life, you're someone else's NPC.
True words have never been spoken. Thank you, Anthony. Alright. Thank you for listening. Yeah. One last time, I'm Ethan.
We're not doing that. I'm cutting it at my laugh there. They know. Why do they need to know who we are? The podcast is over.
Yeah, it's over. Okay, I'm pausing.
Who cares? I might put this... Oh, you already paused, didn't you? Damn, I was going to do the thing that 538 does where you put some banter at the front of your episode. But now it's just going to be me talking to myself like a crazy person.